You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at MyBookie. As we chat this Tuesday, the Rockets still sit at 1-2, the second of two off days before they're back in action tomorrow night against the Utah Jazz at Toyota Center, trying to even their mark to 2-2, get back to 500 on the young season. To discuss what we've learned through the first three games and a bit of a preview for tomorrow night's game, which will not include James Ennis. More on that in a few moments. He's out with a hamstring injury for at least a couple of games, it sounds like. To discuss those things, I'm joined by Craig Ackerman. Craig is fresh off the plane, trying to get some rest in before the homestand, next three in a row at Toyota Center. Craig, I guess it was a fairly quiet trip out to L.A.? Not much happened?
No, I mean, it was, you know, typical. We were there for 5 days, but no, it was the... the usual stuff. Would have preferred them to have swept the doubleheader over the weekend, and obviously that was not the case. Saturday's game against the Lakers was certainly interesting, now they have, as you mentioned, three games here at home, three tough games at home, beginning with the Jazz, who, much like the Rockets, would like to avoid going to 1-3 to begin the season.
Yeah, I was joking when I said that it was a quiet trip because certainly that game in L.A., the first one with
My life outside of the games is not very exciting. So that's where I thought you were.
Oh, gotcha.
What'd you do? I went to get something to eat and hung out and watched some TV. Nothing overly exciting.
Not for you, but for Chris Paul and everybody else on that court. Yeah, I think it was a lot more eventful than people anticipated. Anyway, Craig, I want to get your general sense of where things are after three games, because to me, there's sort of a glass-half-full view and a glass-half-empty view. The glass-half-empty view, look, I don't think anyone, if we had talked a week ago, would have projected the Rockets to be 1-2. They're better than that mark, even with the limited sample size. They've given up at least 115 points in all three games. The defense, the effort, hasn't been where it needs to be, so I understand the concerns. The glass-half-full view would be that if you treat the New Orleans game as something of an outlier, which partially because New Orleans does appear to be a very good team, also you had certain issues in that game that, while I'm not going to say everything's been cleaned up, I would say the focus and effort has certainly been better than it was the opener. And then if you look at the weekend, between winning the game at the Lakers on LeBron's debut at home in Staples Center, all the stuff that went with that, and then losing to a quality Clippers team only by three, night two of a road back-to-back, and without Chris Paul due to the suspension, the weekend results aren't as bad as you might think. So I'm just curious, on that scale, you know, glass half empty, glass half full, what you make of those first three games?
Somewhere in the middle. I mean, I certainly can't sit here and sugarcoat things saying that everything's great, because obviously this has been an extremely disappointing start, being, you know, just 1-2 through three games, as you mentioned. I don't think anybody anticipated that. So there's no reason to sit here and say, you know, it's all rose petals and lollipops, because it's not. I mean, this team, you know, obviously is not where it was at this point a season ago, and there's some work to do, a lot of work to do to get back to that point. But at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and overreact for the various reasons that you mentioned as well to the first three games of the season. If New Orleans stays healthy, they're absolutely a playoff team. They will be one of the better offensive teams in the league. The irony is that the Rockets in their first three games of the season have taken on the top three paint scoring teams from a year ago, and the Rockets have been bludgeoned in that regard in these first three games. But I think those three teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Pelicans, are all going to be amongst the league leaders again in terms of paint points this season. And let's not sort of gloss over the fact that last year, even though the Rockets were the sixth best defensive team in the league and the third best in the league after P.J. Tucker became a starter, defending the paint was also an issue last year. The Rockets were 27th in the NBA last year in terms of paint points allowed. So they're going to give up their fair share now. You know, allowing 69-70 on average per game is not going to be a sustainable number if they want to have success this season. But it will get better. But I also, again, caution that I think team scoring against the Rockets in the paint is something we have seen, did see last year, and will continue to see this year. The Paul suspension threw things out of whack a little bit, without a doubt. I thought the game against New Orleans specifically was extremely disappointing. It just didn't look like the guys were ready to play. And I think, in fact, the theme in both of the losses is that the Rockets have just been outworked. I think that changed under the lights and the atmosphere of what was going on with LeBron's first home game against the Lakers, but the following night against the Clippers, the opener against the Pelicans, they were just outworked, especially on the glass. And I know that's something that's a concern and hopefully something that they can correct moving forward. But they'll be, again, as you mentioned, short on personnel again on Wednesday night when the Jazz are here. So they're going to have to try to find a way to beat Utah, who, again, in their estimation, I'm sure they prefer not to be 1-2 as well.
Where do you fix things when it comes to the defense? Because we can all agree that giving up 115 or more in all three is not where they want to be. But you hit on the theme that, to me, stands out, which is the lack of rim protection. And some of it's who they've played, but some of it is not controlling what they need to control. And if you had told me a week ago, if we'd had this conversation last Tuesday and said, you know, if the Rockets start 1-2, what's the cause? I think we probably would have both said poor defense, and that's what's played out. But what's kind of surprised me a little bit, it's not so much the lack of wing defense. Not going to say that the losses of Ariza and Bamute and Jeff Bezdelic aren't being felt, that they're non-factors. But what surprised me, the games that you've lost to the Pelicans and the Clippers, they're out-rebounded 54-37 in the first one, 49-35 in the second. Clint Capella had 6 boards in 34 minutes. Montrezl Harrell, who's not a good rebounder, had 10 in 24 minutes. I know
Montrezl is a good offensive rebounder. Fair. And he killed the Rockets
fair.
On Sunday.
And
I think it comes down to, they were, like I said, I think the Rockets were just flat out outworked. I think both the Pelicans and the Clippers, to me, just looked like they were playing like they wanted it more in those situations. The game Saturday night looked like the Rockets wanted that more than the Lakers. So I just think they were outworked, plain and simple. I mean, there were a couple of late rebounds that the Rockets gave up to the Clippers.
Yep.
Down the stretch where, you know, there was just a bunch of players standing around and watching. And that's something that can't happen moving forward. And to me, I don't know if it's, I mean, I that's where I would place the blame. Now, obviously, James Ennis, who now unfortunately is hurt, but, you know, he can't continue to, you know, average 6+ fouls per 36 minutes. I mean, the Rockets need him to kind of stay on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a concern. And when he does get healthy, you know, he's got to stop fouling because they need him to be on the floor for sure. But I just think in the case of the two games where the Rockets were clobbered on the glass, it happened to do with work rate, and those two teams just worked harder to get those rebounds.
Yeah, I think they did. I think it goes up and down the roster, and that's what stood out to me, is that it's less about their deficiencies from a talent perspective, and it's more about just sheer want to, including in many cases, you know, you can point the finger really up and down the roster, but you can point to guys like, you know, I mentioned Capella earlier, James Harden has certainly had his lowlights, guys that just, for whatever reason, that were instrumental parts of your defense a year ago, especially in the playoffs, that just don't seem to be fully locked in on both ends of the floor through the first three games. And Craig, the natural question that a lot of folks ask is this comparable to 2015? And of course, that's an extreme overreaction after three games, but we were both around then. And, you know, besides a small sample size, I think it's a little bit of a silly comparison because that team in 2015 didn't have Chris Paul and PJ Tucker in that locker room. It didn't have Gerald Green, all those proven veterans. But what do you say when you hear that comparison thrown out? Because superficially, I know you're coming off a season in both cases where you lost in the Western Conference Finals to the Warriors, but I don't get that vibe with this particular team at all. I mean, do you?
No, I think the comparisons with that begin and end with perhaps maybe, yes, there was a little bit of a hangover from the previous year, and perhaps maybe a guy is reading too much into their press clippings the season before. But that year in 2015, James was not in the best of shape coming into camp that year. That has certainly not been the case. Now, James did not play well despite almost picking up a triple-double against New Orleans, but he's been very good the last couple of games. So, I mean, that's comparing apples and oranges there. There is no comparison. You know, again, maybe, you know, like I said, maybe they just, especially the game against New Orleans, it felt like they just kind of came out and expected that they were going to win. Again, I'm not in their heads. I don't want to, you know, sit here and, you know, say that that's the only reason why, but it certainly seemed that way from the exterior. And you know, and maybe this season a little bit of, you know, the roster has changed over somewhat, maybe some lack of continuity, especially in the case of Trevor Reason. I don't want to go overblown with this whole, boy, the narrative just keeps getting pounded in over and over and over again. I ask people to go take a look at what Trevor Reason has done. With all due respect to Trevor, at the first three games of the season, he was brilliant in the Suns' first game of the season, which they won. But he's gone 2-for-12 from three in their last two games, both blowouts, losses for Phoenix. He's a significant net negative when he's been on the floor for them.
He was minus 47.
Played well against Houston, but did not play particularly well in their other two games. He's only playing about 15 minutes a night. He's been a net negative when he's been on the floor so far. Again, I'm not overreacting to either of those sample sizes either, and so that's why I caution people, don't overreact quite yet to all of this. I think not having, and especially in the case of Ariza, there is a little bit of a continuity issue because he was a Swiss Army knife for the Rockets, and so in that I can kind of get where, yes, they kind of missed this guy here early on just because he absolutely knew his role, where he had to be, and the communication with the players was on point because he had kind of been there, done that. He'd been around James for a while. And James Ennis is just a newer player. Again, the thing with James Ennis, he's got to stop fouling. Again, per 36, he's averaging over 6 fouls per game. So if he played enough minutes, he would have fouled out of every single game the Rockets played this season. That's not good. He's got to stay on the floor. He shot it well from three, but he's got to stay on the floor. So no, I don't think the vibe going into that 2015-2016 season was not good from the start. In the right off the preseason that year, you could tell something was horribly wrong with the team. We're not able to tell that from this group. So, no, is there a little bit of a hangover, perhaps? Maybe were the guys not quite ready to get back to that level of competing at the highest level against some of these teams as being one of the 100 groups in the league? Perhaps. I just think they need to play better. And, again, they need to stop being outworked.
Agree with you. We'll turn our focus forward in just a few moments, but for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at MyBookie, because without support of sponsors like them, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And folks, if you want to bet on tomorrow night's game with the Rockets and Jazz or anything else going around in the NBA or sports, it's important to remember that who you're betting with is just as important as who you're betting on. And that's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are your best bet this NBA season. They've been in business for years. They've got great reviews online. And their mobile site at mybookie.ag is very easy to use. So lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners. It's been good to me. And that's why I'm urging you to make your way over to MyBookie, where you win and they pay. They've got in-game live betting. They've got the most rewarding player props in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Now, to take advantage of a special offer for our Locked On Rockets listeners, join now and MyBookie will match your initial deposit 100% up to $1,000 just by using the promo code LOCKEDON, and that way you can activate the offer where they match your deposit dollar for dollar up to $1,000. So visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your initial account to claim that matching bonus. Remember, MyBookie, that's our sponsors. You play, you win, and you get paid. Now, Craig, looking forward to tomorrow night's game with the Jazz, and it sounds like at least a couple of games without James Ennis, because with a hamstring strain, as we know all too well, those do not go away overnight. That's going to move Michael Carter-Williams into the starting lineup. And I want to get your take on Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo, two guys that have largely underwhelmed through the first week of the year, albeit for different reasons. With Michael Carter-Williams, the driving lanes that were there early in the preseason when he succeeded don't seem to be there. You also have to wonder if his knee is all the way back. He doesn't seem to be really getting the lift that he did in the preseason to me. With Carmelo, it's a little more complicated because defensively, in certain situations, especially against the Lakers, he actually looked pretty good. They were plus 23 with him out there. He had 10 boards in 29 minutes. But the flip side for the season as a whole, look, he's shooting 32%, 20% from three. I believe his player efficiency rating is a woeful 3.7. Now, I'm not as worried about Carmelo because we have a long track record that eventually he's going to put the ball in the basket. But for different reasons, with MCW, it's the shooting, the spacing issues. With Carmelo, it's a very cold start, and I would say inconsistent. He was good defensively against the Lakers. He was not good defensively at all against the Clippers. Maybe some of that is a back-to-back with him being 34 years old. But how do you get those two on track, besides just the obvious fact that they're both new to the system and there's going to be some growing pains?
Well, Michael Carter Williams, there's no sugarcoating this one either. He has not played well at all. He looks like he's playing very nervous out there after playing with, granted, I mean, preseason, and one of the games came against Shanghai, but his first go at it against the Grizzlies, he looked like he was very confident and very aggressive in terms of his attacking, and he just doesn't quite seem comfortable out there. And again, Carmelo, it's about putting the ball in the basket. I mean, I think he's got, you know, plenty of shots that, where he's been open. I haven't looked at his shot chart per se, but Mike, I feel like that he's gotten enough opportunities where he's been open enough where you would consider him knocking that shot, those shots down. I think he's going to be just fine. In the case of also Michael Carter Williams, the Rockets are using him differently than he's been used before. Obviously with Chris Paul's suspension, they're using him sort of as a backup point, but their role, as we're seeing now, is with Ennis out, is as a wing defender. I just don't think he's played with much confidence to start this season. I hope we can start to see it. There was one possession where he was a two possessions that kind of stand out to me, but with both guys just not quite being all the way comfortable. There was a possession later in the game, I think between, it was Gerald Green and Carmelo, and Green thought that Carmelo was going to stay in place, and Carmelo moved, and the ball ended up going in the backcourt for a backcourt violation. And then there was another sequence in that game against the Clippers where Michael Carter-Williams kind of fumbled the ball coming across midcourt. The spacing was bad there. So hopefully with time, those two guys can get more comfortable. But there's no doubt the Rockets, in addition to needing James Ennis to stay out of foul trouble, need those two guys to step up and be better than they have been.
I suppose the hope, if you're looking for a blessing in disguise with this James Ennis injury, is that if a lot of it with Michael Carter-Williams is confidence, at this point they don't have many other options other than to play MCW for extended minutes, not just offensively, but defensively. You just need a long body that you can trust without James Ennis there. And sink or swim, we're going to see what Michael Carter-Williams can do these next two or three games without Ennis, and maybe that's the ticket to getting him, you know, more confident, because certainly he had a very short leash on the weekend, and understandably so, because those are games when you're in the heat of battle. If he's a negative, if he's not confident, you've got to pull him. Well, now
he played, what, two and a half minutes right, against the Lakers?
Right, and now he's going to get a longer leash. He's just got to make the most of it. The other guy, Craig, that I think will get some time has to be Gary Clark. Now, he got his first minutes in the first quarter against the Clippers, unfortunately picked up three fouls in those 3 minutes and then didn't return. So I think there's some seasoning issues there as well. But when I'm looking at filling the minutes of James Ennis, you know, Michael Carter-Williams will get some of them, but I don't see how the Rockets don't play Gary Clark the next couple of games, because quite frankly, I'm just not sure what other bodies they have to turn to.
I agree. I mean, look, he was terrific in the preseason. Again, no reason to overreact to preseason, but he earned himself a spot on this roster. And you're right, they really don't have necessarily anywhere else to turn. So hopefully he got his, you know, I mean, he played in garbage time against New Orleans, but he got his first real live important minutes against the Clippers. And hopefully he's gotten some of those nerves out of his system. I thought that outside of, you know, obviously, that bad turnover at the end of the third quarter for Isaiah Hartenstein was a significant turn of events in that game. He pulled a pass once on a screen and roll with James Harden. But I thought, other than that, for his first real important minutes, I thought he looked pretty good out there. The bottom line is the Rockets need Chris Paul to be out there. Hopefully, at some point, Brandon Knight will get healthy and come out there. And they need some of the, you know, again, they need these new guys to step up and perform better than they have. And I'm fully confident that James Ennis will be better moving forward. I really honestly feel like he's going to be a really good fit with this team. I'm not overly concerned with him. I will admit I'm not overly concerned either with Carmelo. Michael Carter Williams, I thought after what we saw early in the preseason, I thought that, you know, with the position switch and the new role, that he would be able to provide the Rockets those backup wing minutes in a similar fashion like Luke Bamute did. But he's been shaky. They just need these guys to play better.
On the subject of Chris Paul, I want to ask you about, as someone that was in Staples Center Saturday night, because you were on the TV call since it was a road game, how surprised were you by everything that took place with the fracas between him and Rajon Rondo? I know they have their history, but Craig, what really struck me about it, you know, we've each seen our share of chippy situations following the league for a number of years, but many times you can sense it coming. You can feel a game that goes down that path. There might be a couple of hard fouls here and there, and then one team kind of, you know, once they get 10 points down in the fourth quarter, you can sense the frustration boiling over. The thing that really surprised me about this one, and I guess it just traces back into years of history, it didn't seem like there was that much leading into it. Now, I know there was, you know, there was a certain degree of spotlight on this game, and I guess that puts everyone on edge. But really, you know, the whole thing started with a foul that Brandon Ingram committed on Harden. Honestly, it should have been continuation. And Chris Paul got demonstrative, saying it should have been continuation. Rondo comes in, I guess, trying to bark and shut Chris Paul up. And it just escalated so, so quickly to the point where, yeah, we ended up having punches. They may not have been all-out punches, but they connected on an NBA court, and you don't see that much these days. So I'm just curious, as someone that was there, was it as surprising to you as it was me watching on the telecast? Because
yeah, it was surprising. Look, the game was intense. I mean, it really was, and it was a spotlight, as you mentioned, on that game. LeBron's first at home as a Laker. You know, everybody in that city, the vast majority of which are Lakers fans, just, I mean, they're tired of not going to the postseason. I mean, it's been 5 years in a row, which the Lakers have this longest playoff drought in the history of their franchise when they haven't been in the playoffs. And so when they landed the biggest fish of all the free agent fishes out there and LeBron, there was a sense that, you know, the Lakers are sort of entitled to get back there. And there was a certain atmosphere and focus and excitement level about that particular game that had been building. And the game, again, the game was intense. Both teams were coming up losses in their first game. The Rockets were embarrassed on their home floor, and so they absolutely did not want to start 0-2. So it was very intense, and I guess maybe the first thing happened with the flagrant foul that Ennis had on Hart. I certainly don't. I guess Luke Walton thought it should have been a flagrant two. I can understand where perhaps maybe initially seeing it that flagrant two was something that you thought right off the bat, but I think as you watched it again, I certainly don't think there was any intent to harm Josh Hart, and so I think the flagrant one was the right call on James Ennis, and then things after that. I mean, in a tight game in the fourth, it was intense, but no, all of a sudden it's like there's a foul and there's a group of people standing around. All of a sudden, punches are being thrown. So, and especially when you have the president of the Players Association there, you have all a bunch of league executives there. I was not anticipating an all-out brawl there. With three guys throwing punches, Ingram did himself no favors by coming back into the scrum. So, it was one of those nights. Both teams wanted to win that game desperately. Things ultimately did get out of control, and unfortunately for the Rockets, I think they were expecting Chris, obviously, to miss one game. I think they were surprised that he was given two, considering his role in that was primarily, even though we don't know what was said between those two guys on the floor, was primarily reactionary due to the spit. They expected him to probably get one, but they gave him two. It is what it is, and you know, now the Rockets have to try to play without him again on Wednesday.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I was reading the comments on Twitter from Stu Jackson. I suppose what the NBA is looking at in terms of a precedent, you know, it's at least one game for even attempting a punch, and then at least one game for connecting with a punch. So I guess that's what made them think they had to do two. What I was more perturbed by was the language they used to, you know, make it clear that they thought Rondo was at fault, but then only giving Rondo three games. To me, if you're going to say that, you know, Rondo is the instigator, and you've got the video clips courtesy of the Rockets that, you know, show him clearly spitting in Chris Paul's face and also throwing the first punch after that, I would think that he gets, you know, at least double the suspension time. for being the instigator. But as you said, it is what it is. I suppose the good news for the Rockets is that, you know, I said going into the year, Chris Paul, 33 years old, there hasn't been any signs of a fall off, and he was great in the preseason, but you always wonder, is this the year that there's going to be a little bit of slippage? But, you know, before he went out, his numbers that game, Craig, I mean, 28 and 10.
He was the best player on the floor.
Yep, 50% from the field. You know, I know he was a little bit underwhelming in the New Orleans game, but I would think that if there were any concerns at all about Chris Paul, the age 33 season, that performance in Staples Center would seem to minimize those, does it not?
Yeah, he was brilliant. Let's hope he's not having his a fall off in his first season of this new deal. I hope, you know, that might be something we might be talking at the end of this contract he just signed. Let's hope that's not taking place now, because he's getting paid a ton of money and is certainly clogging the Rockets' cap sheet as a result. But no, he was terrific. He was the Rockets' best player, their calming influence. Really was finding guys. He was amazing. There's no question about that. He is certainly still at the very top of his game. They missed him in that game against the Clippers. As much as Eric Gordon is, adept at scoring the ball, he's not somebody to be a playmaker for other people. And so when James Harden is out and Chris Paul is not out there to be another playmaker for you, then, you know, the Rockets can struggle. Chris is still a very good defensive player. He's lost a step, obviously, over the years. Not quite what he used to be, but he's still a very good, smart, heady defender. The Rockets, you know, miss that as well. And so, they need him to be on the floor. But, again, it's he's not there. He's got one more game he's got to sit out. And the Rockets, you know, with some of their issues here up and down the roster at the start of the first week of the season, they got to clean things up. They got to do it without him against a Utah team that's, predicted to be amongst the top four in the West as well. They're not playing like it so far, but they have a ton of talent. And look, you got another shot at the Clippers. The Blazers are always a tough matchup when the two teams play, and not a lot of love lost either between those two franchises. So it should be an interesting and fun homestand coming up.
Absolutely.
Tough schedule for the Rockets.
Yeah, it is.
Start the year, no doubt.
Yeah, these first six games, there are no gimmies at all. And then you finally get some easier opponents, but that's the five-game road trip in early November. So with all these new parts and with the suspension, we didn't know that was coming. It would have been nice to have a breather game in there. Unfortunately, there's not for the time being.
It's a long season.
Yeah, there will be eventually. Last thought on the Chris Paul mess. If there's one silver lining I think you could take out of it, it's that clearly in the locker room, those guys had his back. It kind of seemed as a galvanizing force. The Rockets finished the game on a 15-7 run, basically shut the Lakers down. After that, P.J. Tucker's defense on LeBron had a lot to do with it, but really the Rockets seemed locked in on both sides of the floor, and that's why, you know, I'm just rolling my eyes and sort of laughing at the Rajon Rondo comments today saying, everyone wants to believe Chris Paul is a good guy. They don't know he's a horrible teammate. They don't know how he treats people. And then, of course, citing the tunnel incident from last year. I know you're around the team, but that just, to me, it just jumps off the page as laughable. Because, look, first off, in terms of his prior teammates, Luke Bamute followed him to Houston. We've had plenty of reports that DeAndre Jordan and Chris talk almost every day. And then those guys in the Rockets locker room, I mean, they would go to war for the guy. So I don't know what Rondo is talking about. I'm sure they have plenty of beef over the past 10 years between the two of those guys, but I haven't seen any signs in over a year in Houston that Chris Paul is anything but, you know, extraordinarily respected in that locker room.
I haven't seen it. Obviously, I can't speak to his prior stops in terms of how things were off the floor, because I was never around any of it, but in his year plus he's been in Houston, I've seen none of that. He's a great guy, a real affable guy. And easy to get along with, very accommodating. I haven't seen anything from that regard. And I think his teammates do have his back and do enjoy playing for him. I think if you go through any walk of life, if you run through certain people, there are some people you like and don't like. And well, I'm sure there are some former teammates of him that don't necessarily find him easy to deal with, but I think you can say that about a lot of people in a lot of different walks of life. So I have not seen it. He's been very nice to me. He's been very open and accommodating. I think his play on the floor for the Rockets and his importance to this team speaks more volumes than anything else anybody else says anyway. He's been terrific since he's been here. They really could have used him, obviously, in that Western Conference Finals at the end against Golden State, and they certainly could have used him Sunday as well. So he's still the team's second best player, and they still need him to be around and be healthy and to do his thing. If this team wants to ultimately get back and have another crack at knocking off Golden State. So again, I have not seen it. He's been a good guy. And, you know, I imagine there are a lot of people in Dallas that think that Rondo's not the best person in the world either.
I agree with that. Folks, that's Craig Ackerman, voice of the Rockets. You can listen to him as the lead play-by-play voice on both television and radio broadcast, usually TV for the road games, radio for the home games for the Rockets throughout this 2018-2019 season. Craig, thanks so much for the time. I know you got a cold, so feel better. And
I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, look forward to having you on the call tomorrow night. I guess you're back on radio for Rockets Jazz.
Yeah, on radio for the homestand, and then TV on the road trip, with the exception of the game in OKC, which is national TV exclusive, and I'll have radio for that.
Gotcha. Sounds good. Well, Craig, I'll see you tomorrow at Toyota Center, okay?
All right, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, as always, to Craig Ackerman, voice of the Rockets. If you're not already following him on Twitter, in addition to listening to his broadcast, you can follow him at @CA_Rockets. So with that, we can put a bow on today's episode, and that should do it until we have Rockets Jazz on the floor tomorrow night, after which we'll have our normal post-game episode right here at Locked On Rockets. If you want any more content before then, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, beyond Twitter, if you want to reach out and be in contact with us, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Website at LockedOnRockets.com, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is the email address. Always you can get in contact with me, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential advertiser of this growing podcast, just as my bookie was today. Remember, use the promo code LOCKEDON when you're making your account at MyBookie, MyBookie.ag, and they will match your deposit dollar for dollar up to $1,000. That's your first deposit. They will match it 100%. That's MyBookie, the sponsors of today's show. Also, a few other plugs. If you're not already following Locked On Texans or Locked On Aggies, those are sister shows across this great Locked On Podcast Network based here in the Houston area. We've got local experts really across the major leagues, NBA, NFL, college sports, and MLB. But here in Houston, again, the Houston Texans and Texas A&M Aggies, we have got those programs covered. So if you want to hear from them, you can find those shows at the same places you find Locked On Rockets. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn. The odds are wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find any of these shows across the major leagues because we've got a great network of local experts here at the Locked On Podcast Network. So if you haven't given those shows a try yet and you're a football fan, well, now's a perfect time to do that with the Rockets in a little bit of a lull until tomorrow night's game. Anyway, that'll do it for today. As always, I appreciate you guys for listening, and please come back tomorrow when we'll be breaking down Rockets Jazz as the Rockets look to get back to 500 at 2-2 on this young season. For now, enjoy the remainder of your Tuesday, and come back soon and visit me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily analysis of Houston Rockets basketball.